Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, January 21st, 2014, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. We're happy to announce our next Crystal Quest Arkansas, which will be starting on Pleiadian lineup May 17 through the 23rd. If you have the required star markings on your natal or progress chart, which are 25, 26, 27 degrees of Taurus or Scorpio, Capricorn or Cancer, Aquarius or Leo, then you are part of the soul group having the rites of passage to participate. So if you feel the call of the crystals, please send an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com for more information. And also, after many requests for my music, I'm happy to let you know that my new CD is now available. So check our website for the link to hear some samples. The collection contains 22 songs of inspiration, and you can read more about that on the site. The link is on our show page. Our very special guest this evening is Mr. James Gilliland of the ESETI Ranch. ESETI stands for Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and that's what goes on at his place. Located near Trout Lake, Washington, his ranch is a vortex of energy that attracts over 3,000 sightings of UFOs every year and has been there for most of two decades. Unlike the Billy Meyer contacts, James welcomes people to ask for a reservation to share the experience, since his ranch is one of the hottest spots on the planet for ET contact. His website is www.eceti.org, where you can see it for yourself. There's amazing pictures. James has appeared on many high-profile shows such as Coast to Coast, The History Channel, ABC, and Fox News, and he's written for major publications like UFO Magazine. And we'll be bringing him on right after the news. And at the top of the show, it is the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseeds. We'd like to thank Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And do remember to press 1 on your keypad. So if you like our show, we'd appreciate your support by clicking follow on our show page. And actually, our guest is calling my home line, so stand by. I'll be right back. Strange. That was our guest, James Gilliland, which is why I had to pick it up. He's having a little trouble getting into the show, but I will take care of that as soon as I'm done with the intro here. I will just go ahead and let you know that we have our main site is starseedhotline.com, and you can go there and learn a lot of Starseed information in our vault. And we have Starseed confirmations based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And stage two sessions are one-on-one phone sessions with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. So right now I would like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Hello, ladies.
Good evening.
Oh, hang on, Lavendar, your mic is not on yet. It's coming on, coming on, coming on. Gosh, Mercury's not going retrograde till next month. Okay, Lavendar, there you are.
Okay, well, Anastasia, do you have snow on the ground where you are?
Yes, yes, do you?
No, it's kind of cool, but it's nothing like what I've seen come your way.
Oh, it was so bitter today. I had to wear four layers. It was so frigid. Good grief. It has really been something. What interesting weather.
Well, let's hear what's happening out there in the solar system.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. You're so prescient, of course. We're going to talk about the solar system tonight. But we'll start out, as usual, talking about the sun. And there isn't anything to tell you because the sun is totally quiet. It has been peppered with spots, but no unstable magnetic fields that's going to pose a threat for flares. Solar activity, as we talked about last week, is very low, and they expect it to remain so at least for the next 24 hours. And that's a very short time for the sun. I just think it's going to be a very quiet time. Am I on? I'm getting a ring sound.
Yeah, I'm calling our guest. Hang on.
Hello?
Oh, okay.
Okay, James, stand by. Go ahead.
Okay, I couldn't hear you at first. I can hear you now.
Okay, just stand by, James, okay?
All right.
Okay, go ahead, Anastasia.
Okay, I'm here. Okay, we ready? All right.
Yeah.
That just threw me for a loop here. Okay.
Me too.
Well, at least we're all set now. We're ready to go. There is something happening in the solar system, however. They're calling it a solar system-wide climate change. And gosh, you guys, there's so many things to talk about with regard to this, but I want to talk to you tonight about the tally of Jupiter's moons. You know, they're going up and down. Nobody really knows. And, you know, Mars has two moons, but Jupiter has, well, like I said, it's complicated. Now, Galileo discovered the four big moons around Jupiter in about early 1600s, and today we call them the Galilean moons, of course, after Galileo, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. And it took 282 years for the next Jovian moon, which is short for Jupiter, to be spotted. And a lot has been discovered in the meantime, by the way. We actually have now four Jupiter's moons, 67. The current count stands at 67. Two were discovered in 2010, two more in 2011, and they think others probably remain to be found. Now, they're saying that the Galilean moons, the first four discovered, were much, much bigger than the recent moons, and they think that's why it took the others so long to be found. However, it could very well be, judging from the asteroid and meteor activity going on out there, along with a lot of electromagnetic shifts and other bizarre stuff happening in our solar system, that these are new arrivals being pulled into the gravity and the orbit of Jupiter. This is how moons do get acquired often, is that they are rocks that fly by and get caught by gravity fields. So it's going to be interesting. But it is something to really consider that these were not present before they actually arrived. And so that's just something that we need to think about. I saw some photos of Jupiter's moons on spaceweather.com, and wow, it's amazing. I wonder what it looks like from the surface to look up and see 67 moons. Be really an amazing experience.
Wow.
And, yeah, isn't that cool? Just think about that. That's just very mysterious. But, you know, they're doing some analysis, of course, on Mars. That's constantly ongoing. Maybe you all have heard about this rock that they found. But the NASA rover Opportunity sent back a couple of really surprising images from Mars just last week. It revealed a sudden appearance of a small rock. Now, what do I mean by sudden appearance? Well, in one photograph, it wasn't there in the same place on Mars, and within a short period of time, the same photo of the same area, or a different photo of the same area, revealed, voila, a rock. It appeared out of nowhere, and researchers are trying to come up with explanations as why the rock appeared suddenly when it wasn't there before. And some people are saying, well, it was kicked up by the wheels on the rover, and you know, maybe rolled out when the rover moved, but here's some interesting other stuff. The chemical composition of this rock is unlike anything previously analyzed on the Red Planet. See, there was 2 weeks between the first photograph and then the second photograph where the rock just showed up. They're describing it as to be about the size of a jelly donut, and they say that it contains very high levels of both magnesium and sulfur, as well as twice as much manganese as ever found in anything on Mars. So it's a head-scratching time. In fact, it's been reported that the people at NASA are arguing about it, having very lively levels of discussion, because this is a pretty weird thing. Just turned up out of nowhere and contains materials that are not common on Mars. Isn't that interesting? And we've still had fireball activity, although it has been somewhat lessening last week. There was a bright fireball that was captured on video over Puerto Rico on the 18th of January, and on that same day, a bright green fireball was caught on video over the UK and Holland. And in a similar vein, we talk about booms and fireballs and wildfires. There was a mysterious boom heard on Sunday over the parts of central Virginia. So still activity in the sky. And the Rosetta is due to wake up. There is going to be an alarm sounded for this comet mission that I've been talking to you about. You know, one of the most daring space missions that they've ever undertaken is going to reach a key milestone. Europe's Rosetta probe was launched a decade ago on a long quest to chase down and land on a comet, and it spent the last 2.5 years in hibernation trying to conserve its power. But very soon, an onboard alarm clock is expected to rouse the spacecraft from its sleep, and Rosetta will then warm up its systems and send a signal to Earth. And when we get that I'm awake message, we will be notified that the Endeavour is still on its course, and the Rosetta is due to rendezvous with Comet 67P in August. And I left off the rest of that name because really it's in German and or in Russian and I can't pronounce it. So we'll just call it Comet 67P. In August, they're really going to do that. They're going to try to rendezvous that with a comet in August. Pretty remarkable stuff.
It is.
And those of you that are, what were you going to say, Ariel?
I said it is.
Yeah. Amazing. Yesterday's science fiction is today's science fact, I tell you what. But in Central California, they are experiencing a drought which is unprecedented in its weather history. So they say that there are few sites in the United States or even the whole world that has as old of a record of weather recording as San Francisco. They've been recording weather in an official way since 1849. But this month, the city has surpassed the 1916 dry spell, which was heretofore the driest wet season to date on their longstanding record. Now, a major drought in California would have widespread implications because California's agricultural industry includes more than 400 commodities. It produces nearly half of our fruits, nuts, and vegetables. And so they're very concerned. They are looking forward at the predictions, the weather predictions upcoming, and it doesn't show any promise of rain. So they're hoping that these predictions are wrong because the reservoir waters are down, the snowpack is down, and it's really in a bad situation there in California for water. So I want to talk to you about Beijing. You know, but most of us never think anything about watching the sunrise. It's beautiful. We like to do it when we get up early enough. But can you imagine getting up in the morning and not being able to see the sun except outside on an LED screen? Well, that's what's happening in China. The smog in Beijing has become so thick that the only visible sunrise in this polluted city in the past few days has been the one that they've projected on an LED screen in Tiananmen Square. It is that dark and that smoggy. People going to work have to wear industrial-strength face masks, and the Chinese government has issued a severe air warning advising the elderly and school children to stay indoors, and the U.S. Embassy also is telling Americans to avoid all outdoor activity. And there's pictures of that on the Internet, and it is unbelievable. It looks like the city is in the middle of a major forest fire. It is the densest, darkest, smoky-like stuff descending down over the city, and this is man-made pollution. Well, for those of you that live in South Carolina, you need to know this. The South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control has confirmed that a plume of radioactive tritium is moving off the Barnwell low-level radioactive waste disposal facility in Barnwell, South Carolina. The plume is traveling in the groundwater southwest toward the Savannah River site. Now, traces of tritium have also been located in Mary Branch Creek. They say that no one is drinking the water in the immediate area of the dump site, but everything that travels out and down into the Savannah River and travels downstream eventually is going to get in the drinking water of people that use the Savannah River as their water source. Now, locals are pretty upset about this. This has been going on apparently for some time, and that's just an issue for local government and the people there to get involved. involved with, apparently that's been a big problem. And there's more on that, but that's our headline on that for tonight. And Lavendar, you know, I'm always reminding you of what you said about archaeological things being uncovered. Well, a town from 4200 BC has been unearthed in Transylvania. And Romanian archaeologists are very excited about this. They discovered this huge city. It's older than the Egyptian pyramids. It's the oldest known town in Transylvania. It was built around 4200 BC. It covers 100 hectares, has fortifications, neighborhoods, and a whole lot of vases and statues. They also found 7,000-year-old writings in that area, at least 1,000 years older than any other alphabet, including Sumerian. The writings still remain undeciphered. That's a sensational find.
Wow.
And also, there's been a 16th-century manuscript uncovered that features an image that looks like a kangaroo. Well, what's so important about that? Oh, by the way, you know, those old books had beautiful pictograms in them, beautiful script, letters with pictures, and this is where this kangaroo is located, inside of a picture of a letter. But what's so important about this is that it would prove that Portuguese explorers that discovered Australia, or that they did discover Australia before the first recorded European discovery in 1606. They say if the image is really a kangaroo, and there's debate about that because it does rattle traditional history, but if that is so, it suggests that Portuguese explorers went there before the Europeans. And so there's a big hubbub about that history that we've been taught that isn't correct, very possibly. And a tomb of an unknown pharaoh has been uncovered in Egypt. In Cairo, this is news out of Cairo, by the way, archaeologists in Egypt are saying they believe they've discovered the remains of a previously unknown pharaoh who reigned more than 3,600 years ago. They found the skeleton of King Senebkay, and he was uncovered south of Cairo by somebody, actually, by archaeologists from the University of Pennsylvania here in this country who were working with the Egyptian government. Now, he was not previously known by experts in Egyptian history, and King Senebkay's name was found inscribed in hieroglyphics written inside a royal cartouche. That's how they happened to know who he was. 100,000 fish have died in the northern Nevada marina after a very mysterious and bizarre drop in oxygen levels. And the state wildlife officials are trying to figure out why all the fish have died in this marina. An estimated 100,000 trout, bass, and catfish have died over the last month in the Sparks Marina along U.S. Interstate 80 east of Reno. And they say they have no idea what caused this. The oxygen deterioration was marked. I think it was around 1% when maybe it was a percentage when they needed a number of 7. So practically all of the oxygen was siphoned out of the water. They've been unable to find any live fish in this 77-acre lake. And that's really sad. But that's what's going on in Nevada. And in Southern California in the last few days, there was a 4.4 earthquake that struck Southern California. It was 3 miles north of Fontana in San Bernardino County, and residents did report light to moderate shaking, but there were no immediate reports of damage. And in Rock Island, Illinois, people were asking, what was that boom? People from all over that town, as well as Moline and Milan, Illinois, say they heard it. And at the time of the boom, they say it was snowing heavily, but there was no cloud-to-ground lightning, and nobody knows the cause of that boom. Again, we have to wonder, was that incoming fireball? We don't know. And for those of you that enjoy your tea or maybe your coffee, they have been discovering that there's some really good benefits from drinking tea and coffee. The CDC has had put out a recent warning that the deadly antibiotic-resistant MRSA virus has been taking the lives of at least 23,000 patients a year, and there's been a new discovery that, and by the way, this discovery was published in the Annals of Family Medicine, that confirms that the drinking of tea and coffee is associated with a 50% drop in nasal carriage of the MRSA virus. So the people that drink tea and coffee are 50% less likely to be carriers of the MRSA virus. That is pretty important research if it's accurate. The study concluded that consumption of hot tea or coffee is associated with a lower likelihood of MRSA nasal carriage and possibly even MRSA infection. If you're not carrying it, you're less likely to be infected by it. And, you know, that research confirms the value of traditional plant-based medicine, because the answer to the failure of conventional drugs such as antibiotics is to use what's in the spice racks, and now they're suggesting that we use our coffee maker and teapots as well. And speaking of coffee and tea, there's been a study out that has indicated that caffeine improves long-term memory when it is consumed after learning. Past studies have given caffeine to people before they began learning, and they showed no improvement. But this new study, published in the Journal of Nature Neuroscience, gave caffeine to participants in the study after a period of learning, and they found that caffeine boosted a deeper level of long-term memory, which is very interesting. And this is not news to a lot of you, but a recent study, a new human study, has shown that aspartame is linked to increased cases of leukemia, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and multiple myeloma. And that study was recently published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So as we all know, steer clear of aspartame. There has been something of great concern that you probably have not heard about unless you live on the West Coast, but there has been a confirmed and unexpected die-off of the West Coast sardine population. There has been an enormous decline of 74%, and it's not the first that's ever been documented of sardine die-off, but it's been the most drastic in the last 60 years. And I might add that this massive fish decline of sardines alone is just one of many strange ocean occurrences that appear to have occurred recently in synchronicity with the timing of the Fukushima accident. There have been starfish meltdowns, a strange starfish disease. There was a whale, It was fused. Two whales in one. I'm sorry, that term completely escapes me. It just flew off.
Conjoined?
Perfect. Aren't you smart? Conjoined, yes. So there's been a lot of stuff coming in up off the oceans of the West Coast that are concerning, but the sardine die-off is really hard on the fishermen, and they say they're sending their boats out and not bringing back any fish. So, and our last story tonight is about cats. And this is a wonderful little story because somebody's written a book about cats, and I wanted to share with you what his findings were, what his opinion is, whatever. This is an anthropologist. His name is Dr. John Bradshaw. He is a British, actually, he's an anthrozoologist at the University of Bristol. And he tells us that the first cats that entered the lives of humans about, maybe 9,500 years ago, and that's based on a grave unearthed in 2004 in Cyprus that contains the remains of a cat with a human. And he said that, of course, cats spread to Egypt and throughout the rest of the world and now are quickly, apparently, the most popular domestic pet in the world, outnumbering dogs as pets by 3-1. And they say that while we view our cats, you know, with their little, just little cuddly fur balls, and we look at them like another dependent or a child, he says those fuzzy little fur balls tend to look at us in a very different way. He says that our cats look at us as just a larger, more docile version of themselves. Now, he says for us to remember that cats are essentially wild animals. And he said that cats are hunters. And while most people consider playtime with kitty to be just fun, he says that to the cat, this is considered as a mutual training exercise. The cat's also expecting us to learn how to hunt. And, you know, we all watch them go out and hunt, and they often drag home their prey, leaving it on the doorstep. This Dr. Bradshaw says that they do this so that we can be fed, because they consider us to be rather stupid. He says that house cats think that we're just bigger, dumber cats. He says, but once a cat comes home with a catch and lays it at the door, it will remember that we as humans provide them with food that tastes much better than a dead bird, so they end up leaving the haul right there on the floor. He says that cats can see us as a mama cat, but as their matriarch, we're not as intelligent because we can't do the things that they do. We can't climb curtains. We can't turn midair for a perfect landing. You know, we can't turn ourselves in and out, inside out to wash our face and our feet and our bellies. And so in their view, we're quite stupid. So he says that an upright tail is a greeting, a sign from cats that is probably, he said, the best way for them to show us their affection. It means I love you. And so he says that cats can think that we're as dumb as they want to, but you know, when it gets right down to it, they depend on us for the tastiest food around, much better than dead birds and so on. So maybe we're not that dumb after all, because we can give them the good stuff. But isn't that interesting? I never thought of my cat thinking of me as being stupid, but when you really think about it, I think that could be plausible. You know,
I have something I want to say, since I'm the cat woman of the community here.
Yes.
I was thinking the other day about when a kitten starts learning to clean itself, and then it goes to the litter box, and it does all that in about 6 weeks. And when you think about a human being potty trained, it takes them a year or two.
That's exactly right. So maybe they're right. Maybe we aren't as smart as they are.
And I've had several cats that will go in and use the commode just like I do.
You know, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I have heard of that. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, they go do it.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we have a lot to learn about our furry friends and about all animals. We assume so much being human, but if we had a more natural approach, if we were more aboriginal in our viewpoint, and we really, you know, were shamans, we would look at animals much differently and connect with them on a much different level. And there is such a vast amount of intelligence out there that we don't give credit as we need to. So,
right.
Yeah. And I just want to close tonight's program by mentioning something that's come across my path recently in the last few weeks. A lot of metaphysical people that I'm connected to, as well as my clients, are reporting a lethargy, an inability to feel motivated, feeling stuck, feeling like they don't want to do anything. I just wanted to point out, as I've been mentioning to those that have talked to me about it, that this really is not just about you, if you're starseed out there experiencing this. This is about mass energy. There is so much going on all around us. There are many things in a state of chaos. And I really do just want to say that it really is an invitation from our souls to go very deep inside and to call upon the power that we possess as divinely conscious beings and get really plugged in. We are entering into some very uncertain territory on a 3D level, and Spirit is asking us to take this time of lethargy and sort of lack of motivation to go inside and not necessarily push forward, do, like society dictates to us to do. You know, we're really on a treadmill. Many of us have a great deal of difficulty holding still and getting quiet and going inside. And you just have to be with yourself for a while and do this connection. And don't do it like a chore. It's about connecting to your heart and to who you really are. And this means sitting quietly by yourself for a time, connecting with beauty around you, releasing anxieties. Really, a lot of people are reporting anxiety. My goodness. And again, this isn't just you. It's the energy going on around us on this planet, as well as on a solar system and galactic level. So this is the time, if ever there was a time, in an age when we need to become very connected with our higher selves. And so I'm here to help you if you need my help with that, but I just wanted to pass that along. I know there's a lot of people out there listening to this show or that will listen to this show that have been experiencing this. It is a thing that's happening now. But there are solutions, as I've said. Okay? So that's it for tonight's news.
Well, thank you so much, Anastasia. It's always a pleasure. You come up with the most interesting things that you're just not going to hear in the mainstream. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so Lavendar, we have James Gilliland waiting on the switchboard. And I think I should just bring him online right now, and we'll get it going, okay?
Okay.
Just hang on, James. I'm getting your mic open. There you are, James Gilliland. Welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be on the show again.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. And as you were we were listening to the news, I'm wondering if in your neck of the woods in Washington, if you were experiencing any of those oddities.
Actually, we are, but I'm in Maui right now, so I'm kind of missing what's happening in Washington, but they're letting me know. I took a trip to Mexico to connect down there with a bunch of people and work with some new healing technologies that are coming out, and kind of gathered up those connections and then headed off for Maui now. So I'm over here in Maui and doing some workshops and classes here.
Well, that's wonderful. Would you like to expound on that?
Oh, yeah. There's the Temple of Peace here in Haiku, and it's on the island of Maui. So Friday night I'm doing a talk there from 7 to 9, and we're going to cover, you know, interdimensional mind, all the different things going on, the different groups that are coming in right now, and all the help that's coming in to assist us in these times, and how to connect with that help. And the message we're getting right now, it's interesting. There's some very powerful psychics here on the island, which I've met already and you know, had lunch with and went on some walks with, and some kahunas and things like that. You know, and they're all saying the same thing. They're saying it's now. It's time to get going. We can't mess around anymore. You know, we have to step into our power, you know, open up to our starseed connections, our Star Nation connections, and get on with it, because we're going through a huge shift right now. And I'm really feeling, I know since Thanksgiving and Christmas, there was two massive waves of energy that came through the planet and just pushed everything up. And some of the people that didn't get through the first wave too well, that kind of went back to denial, got hit even harder by the second wave. So it's so important. Yeah, it's so important right now to really do the work, do the inner work, you know, become the observer, and try to hold space for those who are losing it through these shifts, and really get our inner work done, and, you know, heal all the old wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions from past experiences.
And this is what you are doing your workshops with, this material.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm talking about the different groups. You know, one of the things that there's a lot of misnomers I've been helping people understand, and some of those are about what's happening on the higher level, and getting a lot of flack for it, because there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there, you know, about the Star Nations, who they are and what they're doing, and about the ancient history of the Earth. And so I've been helping a lot, you know, kind of clear that up, because, you know, a lot of people think the Anunnaki are reptiles, and, you know, they aren't. They're the bearded gods. You know, they're the ones that we got our image from, of the bearded god. And they were everywhere. I mean, they were in Iraq and Iran and that area and Africa, and you know, set up their colonies there, and then they moved over to Greece and became the Greek gods. They were almost everywhere, and that's where we got our images. And they were all different. There were different groups that set up camps in different places, and they had kind of a they had a Council of 12, and they had a that ran under universal law. There were 6 men and 6 women on the council, and they kind of separated into different groups and gave different leaders power over certain areas. And those different groups actually were the key figures in setting up most of the religions, which unfortunately are separating people to this day. But each one had a little different way of doing things. And if you go back to the original two, you had Enki, which was the creator god that, you know, loved creation and gave the Neanderthal man that was existing on the planet a jump in consciousness and genetics. And there was a trade-off, and for that gift, they assisted them in getting the gold, which they used as an aerosol. They also ingested it to keep their planet alive. So it was kind of a win-win situation, but the original group left, and they left a couple hundred of those people, some people say 300, as overseers. And those are the fallen ones. Those are the ones that fell. and got into turf wars and disputes and created a real mess down here. So we're still dealing, you know, with that mess right now. And one of the Anunnaki actually aligned with the reptilians and the greys and brought them in because he wanted to have total domination over the planet. And so today we're still dealing with that mess. We've got this image of a creator God that loves creation, an all-forgiving, all-loving God. And we have an image of this jealous, wrathful God, the destroyer God, and which were at odds with each other. And then their offspring and the other leaders that were here who divided into different camps and got into, you know, the ultimate Hatfield and McCoy program, you know, turf wars.
Oh, man.
And we're dealing with this today. Now, the good news is, and this is what a lot of people can't handle for some reason, they're very upset, is that the original Anunnaki are back. And they're not negative. They're very benevolent. I've connected with them. I've had long conversations with them on an inner level, and several of us had. And they said that they've returned and they're calling back the fallen ones. And they're having to stand before their council and kind of atone for what they've done. And it's not pretty. It's not a pretty picture when it happens. But they said that they are about 70% done with that program of kind of restructuring and eliminating that influence on the planet. And they said they're about 80% done with the removal of the reptilians and the greys that have been wreaking havoc on us for years.
And when did you come by this information? I mean, how long have you known this?
I've known this for quite a while. I wanted to keep working on it and continue working with them to see, you know, their true nature, their true colors, and make sure they are who they say they are. And so now it kind of wasn't time to bring some of this information out, too, because people weren't ready for it. But now is the time to bring it out. And this latest information about the 70% information, we just caught, like, actually yesterday.
Wow. Yeah, I was just trying to line it up with other important galactic meetings that we know take place, and it certainly does.
Yeah. I was wondering what you're probably getting similar information, that there's just the push. And I've seen, you know, the Pleiadians, the Orion Council of Light, the Andromedans, the all the benevolent ones, they are all working together. And, you know, the Syrians, the felines, and everything, that those are the protectors of the gods that were around back in the day. You know, there's ancient, you know, statues of them. There's hieroglyphs of them. There's even in India, you know, they had these huge lion beings that were protectors of the gods. So there's an ancient history of this, and these groups are back now, and they're back to kind of reset things and get things back on course.
Well, Lavendar, you want to comment on that? Because I know that you have similar understanding.
Well, yes, I do agree with everything he's saying. And they have been coming back at different times. I know that I was in contact with a small group of them, about 200 of them, in 1983. And they came to stay for 2.5 years, and then they left. Because they were setting the new programs with the Starseed. They did a lot of implementation with technology. All kinds of things happened back then. And they come back periodically to check on the readings. So this, it goes along with what he's saying, goes along with some of the things that I've been tracking. And the Teton meetings that happen, of course, inside of the Tetons in Wyoming, January 1 through 7, July 1 through 7. And as of the meetings of January a year ago, right after 2012, it was like they threw all the chess pieces off the board and put new ones on. It was all about the new evolutionary programs that were going to be introduced to the people and the planet. And they had to do with harmonics and frequencies and astrological timing and some of the new technologies that some of the ETs were now going to be, you know, beaming to the Tesla kids on the planet. And mm-hmm. and there was this huge amount of energies that came down all at once, and so many people picked up on it and started inventing, you know, all these different gadgets, alternative medicine gadgets, free energy devices, ways to clean and purify water, you know, all those, I mean, in different ways than what we had before. So mm-hmm. it's like the cabal's on the run because there's too many of us now on the planet that are awake and ready to go forward with the work. And every day we have more and more starseeds that are being born. We have a lot of walk-ins that come and are assisting at all different levels. So I'm very hopeful. There's a lot mm-hmm. happening. There's a lot of chaos going on. But at the same time, there's a lot of alignments that are happening that are going to serve us as starseed and the planet, and getting ready for the for all the ships that are going to be coming down and making themselves known. No longer are we going to wait for the government to tell us anything. Isn't that right, James?
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's like, you know, I was talking about this disclosure project, and I kept asking people, well, why are we still asking a government that's lied to us for over 60 years to all of a sudden tell us the truth? And if they did tell us the truth, how would we know it's not twisted to their own programs? You know, they're going to twist it. You know, they'll find and say, okay, yeah, aliens are here, but they're here to eat us, you know, so we need a bigger space program or whatever, which is, you know, creating the false flag, you know, alien invasions and things like that. But I always ask people, why, you know, why don't you go to your own heart and soul? Why do you need somebody else to tell you how to believe or what to believe in? And a lot of people get upset at that. And I just said, well, why are you giving your power away to some external authority to tell you it's okay to believe the obvious?
Right. And expecting full 100% truth from any government and anywhere on the planet, it's just not going to happen. But certainly, I love the title of your of one of your radio shows, Contact Has Begun. Mm-hmm. And it's on an individual level. They're not going to make a big governmental announcement. So, but you've got it all going on at East Seti Ranch, and when you have like a season when obviously people are not going to be going there in the dead of winter, but mm-hmm. When does it actually open up in the spring?
Well, probably open up towards April, probably the beginning of April, depending on, you know, the weather. We don't have much snow this year at all, so it might be a lot easier to open up. There's usually we have to, you know, clear out all the snow and get rid of, you know, any downed trees or any damage done through winter and things like that, and get ready. And we usually don't open till around, you know, end of March or April. But, you know, we'll see how it works out. I know I've got a lot of projects happening away from East Seti, so I'm not there right now. And, you know, kind of lining up a lot of things here. I'm really hoping to do like an East Seti 2 here on Maui. I've been looking at different pieces of property and talking to different people. And there's a lot of people that want to set something up over here on Maui so we can continue to work with people during the winter. Because when the snow flies and we get snowed in up there, we just have to close down the ranch. So we're working at creating, you know, some kind of an East Seti 2.
Wow, and I imagine that the view of the sky must be just unparalleled out there in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. I had an amazing event. As soon as I got here, I got off the plane. We were driving down the coast, and a whole pod of whales just came up out of the water. They were breaching and flapping their fins, and one of them just gave birth, and she was holding her baby up. You know, they do that to get their baby moving and breathing. And she was just totally swimming around holding her baby up in the air. It was quite an event, a beautiful rainbow and everything. I go, boy, what a welcoming. You know, this is a hard to top, you know. And so the next day we drive down the road, same thing happened. which was amazing. And then a friend that I met here, his name's Three Bears. He has a beautiful boat. He took us out on his boat, and we got to go out and actually swim with the whales. And unfortunately, you know, there's rules about that. You can only get so close and things like that. But, I mean, the whales were coming right up to the boat, and we had to kind of move away because there was other boats out there with yellow flags on them, I guess, which means they're watching you. So if you break any rules or anything. But it seems like the whales were trying to communicate or trying to contact us, and we had to keep moving away, you know, because of the rules, you know, the rules.
Well, at
of
least
engagement.
You're being...
I understand. Okay.
I said, at least they're being protected.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I understand that because there are people that would go out there unconsciously and just totally bother them, and especially when they're giving birth and things like that. But it's almost like this mother whale, and when we're out there again, there was another whale that gave birth, and she was just like almost presenting her baby to us. You know? And,
wow.
You know, yeah, it was amazing. And then the male showed up, and he just came right up to the boat, you know, and just, you know, and let us. I go, well, where's the male? I mean, shouldn't he be around? You know, and all of a sudden he just pops up out of the water. And, you know, it was really nice. And we were playing flutes and singing to them and chanting and things like that. And you could tell they were really feeling the vibes and knew that we were there with really good intent.
Well, that's wonderful. And do you know of any ET connections with certain races and those and aquatic whales and dolphins and things?
Well, a lot of people say that their souls are from Sirius and that their connection, you know, they're all connected. And I've heard stories about the whales, the whales, dolphins, and I think the elephants all are kind of the same soul group, you might say. So I heard a lot of different stories. All I know when I tune into them, I have a lot of dreams where I see them and I'm looking right into their eye, and the energy and the information that they carry, and you know, and the power that they carry is just immense. It's incredible, you know. So I kind of go, you know, I read the stories and the other things, but I always go by my own experience with
them, right.
And it was pretty amazing.
Wow. Well, they certainly knew you were there.
Yeah, I was very honored by the what they were doing. You know, it was quite interesting. And you know, what's too is that they seem to be doing okay. You know, they still seem to be healthy. They were, you know, it made me feel good. You know, I couldn't really tell, but they seemed to be in really good shape. They were spouting, and they were just having a good time over there. And I'm hoping that maintains, and that we get a lot more divine intervention, especially on the whale's behalf, and you know, the other sea life out there with the Fukushima nonsense and the other things that, you know, that the archons have been doing to kind of create as much havoc as possible on the planet.
Well, on that subject, do you know of any ET intervention at some point to save the Pacific Ocean? Because we're hearing reports that are very disturbing about the the radiation. I mean, is there a line that it will get to where they will step in?
You know, I believe there is. I've heard different reports, and there's some people that are channeling messages or whatever. They're saying, oh, there is no radiation, it's all being cleaned up and this and this and this. And then you hear people that are taking Geiger counters down there and measuring it, and it's very high, you know, and the fish, you know, a lot of the especially the bluefin tuna, the fish that travel fast distances, they're very fast fish, are coming up hot. You know, they had 15 out of 15 test positive, you know, for radiation. So I kind of go by the science. You know, I think a lot of channels might be saying one thing, and it's more like wishful thinking, or they're channeling their own subconscious. But I do believe that the one of the things that they told us, and they very much stressed this, they said, if enough of us wake up and start asking for help, and gather together in groups and start focusing on seeing the earth whole and healthy and lifting and, you know, rising up to our own God selves and then sending that energy back down on the planet to help heal the planet, that they can, that it frees them up where they can do a lot more and they can intervene a lot more. But while there's a large percentage of the planet that's asleep and that's continuing to work for, you know, the dark hearts and doing the greed and separation game and things like that, it's much harder for them to engage or intervene, you know. But the, you know, the regenerativees and the other beings have engaged so much, that's why a lot of people are asleep and don't have a clue as to what's going on, because they've been, you know, lied to and manipulated and controlled their whole lives, you know, from birth on, basically.
Also, I'm imagining this scenario where, you know, when children are being naughty, you sometimes have to let them get burned, you know, because if you protect them all the time, then they won't really take as much responsibility, and they'll just let mom and dad clean up the mess and then go do it again.
Yeah, exactly. It's very similar. I mean, they've been warning us. They've been screaming at us since the 40s, even before that, to get rid of the nukes, that don't go there, don't play with that technology. It's a very dirty technology. You can't control it. You can't get rid of the waste. Like, you shouldn't go there. And they've shut down nuclear facilities, you know, many times, both in Russia and the U.S. And they made it very clear that we're not allowed, where there's no way we're going to have a nuclear war, because nothing's going to come off the ground. You know, they're not going to allow it. I know Dr. Robert Salas was one of them that was at Malmstrom, I guess, when they came and shut down this nuke site there, and they went and disarmed all the nukes and took the lids right off the these massive iron lids, you know, that are over the silos. They just tossed them like toys. And so you know, and he told me he doesn't really talk about this, but he says there's a lot more that went on there than we know about. And he said he got a really clear message that, you know, we need to stop this. We need to dismantle this stuff and get rid of it. It's you know, we shouldn't even have this kind of technology, and it's detrimental to the entire planet. So there's a lot more communication went on than just shutting down the nukes. And the same thing happened in Russia. They took over their computers and they ran them right down to launch and then shut them off. And they couldn't stop their computers. They even cut the power off to them and everything, and they kept going. And then they just shut them off right at the last second. So, I mean, they gave everybody a very powerful lesson. Look, you don't have control here. You shouldn't even try to mess with this kind of technology, and you need to leave it alone. But, you know, we keep going, and we keep building, you know, more nukes and more problems, and we have a long history of greed and total disrespect for humanity, the earth, and the consequences. And so, as long as we continue to allow the powers that were, what I call them, to continue, you know, making these decisions and not rising up and saying, you know, we disagree, it kind of ties their hands to a certain degree of how much they can do, you know, on our behalf. But what I understand now is I think they are, because, you know, of all the wars and the disease profiteers and the people that are just wreaking havoc on this planet. It's gotten so bad that, you know, for the planet's sake herself, they have to come and they have to intervene and shift things. So that's what I see happening in the very near future, is that we don't have the luxury of staying asleep and doing nothing anymore. We have to wake up and we have to get off our butts, you know, and get
right
off the mountaintops and get down and get busy.
Right. Well, you know, that kind of fits right in with what Lavendar was just saying about what she calls the Tesla kids, inventors and people with new alternative ideas for energy and, you know, cleaning up the planet. So that could be one of their actions to resolve that, is by inspiring the people who are already predisposed to invention and understanding cleaner energy, and just go and, you know, give them the information and let them run with it because they're already here, and we just need to empower those people. And as you said, the 99% need to wake up and say no.
Yeah, definitely. Time to stand in our own divinity, you know, and stop looking outside of ourselves for solutions, because the solutions are coming from within, and we need to make it happen, you know. But, yeah, that is a huge push right now. These kids board everywhere, and they have, you know, holographic technology. They know how to work with radionics. They know how to generate, you know, free energy and anti-gravity, counter-gravity, all of that stuff. Is coming out in a huge way, and there's no way it can be stopped right now because it's just coming through so many different people, and there's more protection now than there was in the past. So there is a lot of protection around some of these kids that are coming forward and these other people that are getting this technology out. And from my understanding, I can't talk about it a lot, but I know from some inside sources that there's a lot of agreements that have been made that to allow this to come forward. It has to come forward now. And there's also technologies now where we don't need a nuclear reactor. We actually have devices that run on fuelless energy that we can plug right into the dynamos to run them, to spin them, you know. So we don't need this old technology. We don't need the nuclear waste. We don't need the companies that are profiting at both ends, both building these nuclear plants, you know, cashing in on the power and then cashing in on the waste disposal at the same time. So the same people that are making the mess, they're creating the waste that we can't dispose of, we don't have any way to deal with it, are also getting paid, you know, to clean it up. And so they really don't want to clean it up because it's a huge moneymaker for them. They don't want to engage technologies, the radiation. They've proven it. And I know people that worked on that project, they showed that they could negate the radiation with several different ways. And there's other people that know how to do it by just changing the spin of the atom and things. You know, they have other technologies to do that, but, you know, that know how to do this. But what's sad is these people are being blocked right now by the very people that created the disaster.
Well, we'd have to just know that it's not a situation that can just keep going around in circles, and eventually, you know, the lighter side will prevail, because it has to. You know, the Earth's vibration is ascending, and so is, you know, the people on the planet. And if you don't ascend, you have to go somewhere else and make a mess.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, too, you know, yeah, we have to be frequency specific to the ascension process that's going on with the Earth, or we're not going to be here. And the powers that were, that's their main problem, is that there's two things that they overlooked. One, they're not outside of universal law or karma or action, reaction, whatever you want to call it. Despite their belief systems, they're not outside of the reaction to their actions. Two, there's a much higher force involved here beyond their imagination and beyond their technology or any of their other toys that they're trying to use to suppress everything. You know, the forces coming in are so far beyond that. It's beyond anybody's imagination. And I think another thing is that it's not only is their karma going to catch up, it's they're just not frequency specific to the Earth's evolutionary process, because they're still running, you know, the power and wealth hierarchical program, which that grid is falling apart. It's just being torn apart right now and crumbling. So that old grid, our old civilization, the old program that we're on, it's not frequency specific to where the Earth is evolving, and it's totally unsustainable, and there's no way it can continue. Now, another thing too is with this shift in these energies that are coming in, and the massive bombardment of gamma rays and cosmic rays and the different energies coming from the sun and everything else, they're finding out that all the elements are going through change as well.
Really?
So even carbon, you know, is changing. So we're going to be moving to more of a silicon-based race of beings, you know, and And so I think if we continue on this evolutionary process, which we can speed up by our own choice and free will, we can change the DNA, everything, which is going under change anyway, but we can speed up that process, is that we can actually move beyond the effects of, like, the Fukushimas and the core exits and the Gulf War, I should say, too, you know, all that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, war know, against
you know,
nature.
We, yeah, it's kind of a race I'm seeing. I mean, I'm watching my body dealing with it, and I've been hit by everything from psychotronics to every kind of chemical warfare you can think of, you know, that they've dropped on us to shut us up. But my body keeps transmuting it, and, you know, and I go through the symptoms and the suffering and the other stuff. I always seem to get on top of it and get above it. But, you know, it's not that I'm not taking hits. And one of the things I was told by a very wonderful psychic here named Roy, and I sat with him for a while, and he says, you know, he said, you need to redo your contract. And I said, what? And he said, well, you have counsel after counsel after counsel and layers that you're working with. And he said, but, you know, you're still operating under some of the old programs. And he said, you need to sit down and write out a new contract with them and make it very clear, you know, and end it and say, okay, rather than taking these hits and things like that, you want protection up front, you know, because rather than letting the native guys hit you and then they come back and hit them because of universal law, because they came at you with deadly force, so now they can go back and clean that up. He said, just you know, change the contract. You know, tell them you want protection up front and you want their consequences to come to them and to leave me out of the loop. You know, so.
Yeah, well,
it
makes sense.
To deal with all this other. Yeah, and, you know, it was really interesting. He said there's a lot of things, you know, and I talked to him about a lot of people that were sent to me, you know, in my life, and people, unfortunately, that were like Manchurian candidates, you know, they were severely abused and chipped and programmed, you know, at a very young age and split in consciousness and you know, especially even relationships, there was a reoccurring pattern there where you know, the archons of the darker energies were just jumping in to relationships, to everything. And I go, you know, I'm so done with this program. This is such an old program. I'd rather just be a monk. You know, I can do monk in cave very easily, and I'd rather just do that, you know, and then deal with all this nonsense. You know, I said, I'm all about just being love and kind to each other and try to focus on that as the priority, you know. And if the stuff comes up, own it, you know, on both sides. We all need to own our stuff. But, you know, it just hadn't been working out that way. So anyway, yeah, he was saying, well, yeah, you need, that's another one. You know, you need to rewrite that contract too. And it was pretty funny, you know, but it really made a lot of sense when I thought about it. You know, we're still running these old programs, these old, whatever you want to call them, have old contracts, old programs, old belief systems or things like that, and we need to just sit down and forgive the past and release the past and let go of it and then rewrite our future, you know, what we want to experience. And he told me, he said, you have levels upon levels of beings waiting, you know, to help you, to assist you in this process, and I think all of us do.
Well, that's so true, and so many people are, you know, banging their heads up against the way they think it all is,
mm-hmm.
and you shift that to that maybe used to be like that, but, yeah, I think everybody can rewrite their contract and take a step up, because you can't live in the third dimension and not get touched by, you know, all of those old programs, but identifying that they're running, you know, that's really an advantage that you've had, because when you look at something, you can see what it is, where, you know, other people might, you know, get fooled. I just had a flash on that old show Mission Impossible, when they send in all these, you know, they set it up so that you really believe something is happening, and it's just smoke and mirrors.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have the way you think everything should be, you know, and you end up shooting all over yourself, you know, in the process, and it just creates a big mess, and it doesn't allow you to see it for what it is. And And I think, you know, I've talked a lot about this, and a lot of people have gotten very angry at me about a lot of the New Age teachings of that, where they say, you know, everything's an illusion and that there is no evil and you shouldn't. And if you look at this stuff, it's in you, so don't look at it. You know, don't deal with it. And a lot of people don't realize a lot of those programs actually came out of Stanford Research Institute, and they were funded by the CIA. And they were a way of programming people to allow evil to just totally run rampant with no checks, you know, or balances. And so it's kind of sad when you start talking about anything negative, they go, well, you're in fear. You know, you're unevolved. That's fear porn. You know, I don't want to hear about it. And I always tell them, well, you're afraid of looking at it. You know, I'm not in fear. I'm looking at straight between the eyes and dealing with it. And I'm not the one in fear. And I'm not feeding this energy. I'm saying this is what's going on. This is what we need to deal with. And I was on a show the other day. It was a Mel Fabregas show. And he said, you know, it's like your neighbor's house is on fire. It's burning down. And he said, do you just ignore it? Do you just look the other way? And so this isn't really happening. This is all an illusion. You know, or do you go over there and bang on the door, or even kick the door in if you need to and pull the guy out? He said, you know, the enlightened thing to do would be to, you know, help the guy out and get him out of there. And that's why I feel the same way. If you're aware of things that are harmful to humanity and the earth, and you're aware of these ongoing programs and that they are creating a lot of pain and suffering, we do need to address it and need to look it square in the face and, you know, without fear and deal with it, you know, with loving detachment maybe, but we definitely need to take a look at this stuff and not live in denial anymore and not participate in it, because a lot of us are willing participants in these programs and we know about them, but we're getting paid very well to continue, you know, creating our own demise.
I'd like to say something about those programs. I have a saying now when I think about the old programs, and it's called, "You should have had me when I cared."
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of my favorite Lavendarisms, but it's so true.
You know what?
You know?
I was talking about this. This one guy, he goes, the more I'm awakened and the more I look around me, the more I realize I incarnated into a world of idiots, you know, which is kind of funny in a way. I guess it's kind of judgmental in one way, but I really think about it is the more you awaken and the more you look around yourself at the condition of this society and the condition of the environment, you know, and, you know, with all the wars, the depleted uranium, the chemtrails, the you know, I can go on and on, the GMO crops that are sterilizing everybody, creating all the cancers, you know, the aspartame, the Gulf spill, the radiation, the Fukushima. You look at all this stuff and you go, God, am I just surrounded by morons? Is anybody else seeing this? Like, what is wrong with this picture? But, you know, the good news is I am seeing that there are a lot of people that are waking up now and they realize they have to participate and that we all have to work together to make these changes. And I think that's one thing that Fukushima has done, is it's united the planet in a way that we're all going, hey, wait a second, this affects us all. This is an incredibly damaging event that affects the whole globe. And so we are all going to have to rise up and forget about this corporation that is holding everything back and just throwing Band-Aids on the situation. And that's what I'm seeing. There's a huge global cry and right now saying, hey, we have to deal with this. We have to bring our best minds together and all work together in dealing with this. And I think once everybody's unified and they're serious and they're moving forward to deal with this, that's when they're going to really get some help and some new techniques and processes, and a lot of help on a high is going to come in to help, you know, mitigate this problem.
James, what do you know about Monsanto buying out Blackwater and putting about 500,000 agents out there so they could hold on to their power of Monsanto? What have you heard about that?
Well, I know Bill Gates actually bought a huge share of Monsanto, and then they bought Blackwater. And he's also very involved in a lot of the inoculations and openly said the inoculations are going to take care of the population problem. So you really look at these people who are all smiling and saying they're helping humanity, and they have these foundations and things like that. You know, I think they had something like 12 cases of polio, and they ended up with 45,000 people either being totally crippled or dead after their inoculation. And I think when you have 12 people that they could come up with that had polio before the inoculation, it's like, there's something wrong with this picture. So, again, we have to do the math and say, okay, are we really helping these people? You know, who is the Red Cross? Who is this World Health Organization? Now, who are these supposedly humanitarians that are responsible for the genocide of millions? You know, and the same thing with Monsanto. Monsanto is just one big genocidal program. You look at the research on what happens to the rats and the cows and everything else when fed for a long enough period. They did really short tests to get their stuff through, but if you carried out the test a little further, the rats were all just, that ate the GMO corn, were just filled with cancer, you know, and they end up becoming sterile. They're, not to get graphic, but some of their balls just turned blue and fell off, basically. So I think a lot of men ought to think twice about eating GMO foods, you know, especially considering the impact of that. And it's a sterilization program. It's a genocidal program. You know, there's no doubt about it. And a lot of the scientists now are all spilling the beans and coming forward and saying no. And I know a lot of countries now have banned GMOs. Here in Hawaii, I think it's Margaret Willey actually passed a bill to ban GMOs. And I had her on the show, on my show earlier, and she said it was like lagging, you know, she wasn't sure if it was going to come through or not, and wasn't sure if the mayor was going to sign it. And so, you know, we put her on the show, and I know she went on some other shows and things like that. We really broadcasted this out and put some pressure on them, and they did sign it. So if we get these people that are doing the good work, if we get behind them and support them and put pressure on the people that need to put the signature on the dotted line, we can get a lot of these things changed.
Well,
James, I'd like to ask you a question about some of the kahunas that you've met there. Have they been talking about the Pleiades or their origins or star people? What is their ancient stories that they've been telling you?
Well, a lot of their stories do go back to the Pleiades, and they point to the Pleiades as their ancestral home, which is quite interesting, and they're very aware. One of the kahunas, she crossed over recently, named Nahi, that we work with quite a lot, and it was quite interesting. She started ringing my phone about a year after she crossed over, and I'm looking at my phone, and there's no app for that. It wasn't in, you know, the voicemail, it wasn't in messages, and her name is popping up, and it's kind of a weird program. I have no idea what it was. It says her name, my phone is going boing, boing, making this weird noise, which I don't have an app for. And so she kept doing that, and I kept showing Rich, who was her right-hand person. I go, look what's going on here, you know, and then she started communicating to us, and she was really wanted him to get going with his work and get on with his work and really concerned about him, and she was going through me to get the message to him, but I thought that was hilarious, and we started asking her, well, where are you now? And she said, I'm with the Orion Council of Light, and she's working with the Palladians as well, and they're here, you know, assisting humanity, you know, with this transition process, which is exactly what she was doing here on Earth as well. And I thought that was kind of funny. I said, you know, it's kind of funny because she is one of those people she used to pray to, you know, and ask for help. You know, now she is one of the initiators, you know, and the higher beings that is up there working with people. But, yeah, there's a very strong Star Nation connection here, and the whales and the turtles and everything, it's all connected with them, the you know, the nature spirits. It's all... There's not any resistance to doing anything. You know, it's funny. I was talking to this guy, Hawaiian guy, a younger guy, and he was there with his kid. He just seemed like your basic, you know, dutiful father, you know, taking care of his kid and everything. And he was having lunch next to us, and we were talking to him, and I can't remember what we said, but we were talking about this talk that I was going to do, and he says, He goes, well, yeah, we all know America's run by reptilians and greys anyway, you know. So it was kind of funny, like just out of the blue, this guy just meet, you know. He says, oh yeah, we all know who's running the show here, you know. He said the regenerate ETs are the ones in charge, you know. So it's kind of funny, but that's coming to an end. And when I told him what was happening, that's coming to a close, he was real excited about it. He goes, all right, you know, like, you know, he got excited. But they're very awake, very aware of what's going on.
What do you know, James, about the tall whites? And I've been getting some information from several people this week talking about that the tall whites are behind a lot of the government's actions and behind the cabal. What do you think of that?
Well, it does seem to be they're very involved with the military-industrial complex and a lot of the negative ET stuff happening, it seems like. And I don't know who they are, basically their origins or what their agenda is. I know about the history, and I've heard of other people talking about them. And some of the interactions, too, is that they basically tolerate us, but if we get between them and their goals or mess with their families or anything else, we're, you know, in big trouble. So they don't seem like a real loving, compassionate, you know, heart-centered group to me. That's all I can say from what I've heard. But I haven't looked into that. And, you know, I probably should spend some more time talking with the other benevolent beings about who they are, what they're doing, and why, what their agenda is. But I think they're, like everybody here, they're going to have to come around too, and they're going to have to evolve. I mean, they are already highly evolved, but they're going to have to evolve spiritually and get on the right side of the fence when things come down. They're probably aware of that as well.
And, you know, you talk a lot about the felines, and I know you've got some great pictures on your website. And besides their appearance, what is their planet of origin? Because I've never heard you say anything but the felines. Where are they from?
Yeah. They're mainly coming out of Sirius, that area, that section. And they were in ancient Lyra, and they have connections in a lot of different places. They used to be on Earth in the ancient days, you know, protecting the gods, and they walked right alongside the benevolent Anunnaki, and that's all recorded, you know, through the Vedas and the ancient India. You know, if you go to the temples over there, the pyramids, you'll see a lot of hieroglyphs. You'll see statues of like Sekhmet and all these other felines that were working alongside the pharaohs. A lot of what happened is the energy fell, and they could no longer handle the energies here or deal with the energies here. It was turning very aggressive, and a lot of, you know, with all the in-house fighting, you know, with the Anunnaki and things, and they left. So they actually just took off and said, okay, we're out of here. But they're coming back now, and they're coming back to help a lot of light workers and initiate a lot of people. There's a lot of starseeds down here that actually were felines in other lives and other, you know, in their soul, they actually incarnated, you know, in these other civilizations on the soul level. So we had an amazing experience just maybe an hour ago where there was a woman that came here, and she hooked in to the felines, and her face changed. And she kind of looked like a cat anyway, like a humanoid feline, but her face totally changed, and her eyes were yellow, and she was just glowing, and she just exploded, you know, and was crying and opened up. She goes, God, I feel so much love and so much joy and energy coming through me. She goes, I don't know what to do with it. And that was her reconnecting, you know, to her star family, to the feline race that she, on a soul level, is very powerful with. So that's happening a lot with people. I was in a restaurant the other day, and I looked at another woman. I could see the feline energy around her, and I just popped a picture up on my iPhone, and I said, yeah, you ever seen these before? And I popped it in, and she just sat there and started shaking and started getting the download right there. And she said, my daughter keeps talking about them. My her little kid keeps talking about these cat people and everything else. And I said, that's because she's one of them and she remembers. And she doesn't, you know, she talks about, she goes, where's the other moon? You know, how come there's not two moons here? You know, and things like that. So it's pretty funny because there was time on Earth when there were two moons.
Right,
we had
right.
one moon, no moon, then two moons, and so it's kind of interesting watching all the connections happening about that. So a lot of people are being initiated on a soul level, and they're reconnecting with their star families, and a lot of those are felines.
I know I see a lot of people, and I can see the feline DNA, just something in their actual physical body has
mm-hmm.
kind of a cat-like, and I don't know
exactly
what it is, but it's there's a lot of people with feline connections, and it really is a very loving, protective race, especially from what
yeah.
I've learned from you.
As long as you're on the right side of the fence, you know they're a very good ally to be hanging out with. But if you're going to continue on the negative side of things, it's you know they're probably the last people you want to see appear in your living room.
Yeah, you know they are protectors and have been protectors
mm-hmm.
and filled that role for a long time.
Oh yeah.
So. I know from Lavendar's information that the Pleiadians are like 3,500 years ahead of us in technology, and there are races that are even farther ahead than that. So
mm-hmm.
is that align with what you know?
Oh, definitely, yeah. They're, when I was with Roy here, he was looking above me and he says, who are those people in the gray jumpsuits, you know, that I go, are they kind of like spandex suits? They're really tight fitting. He says, yeah. And he said, there's a whole council above you, you know, that I'm looking at, a whole group of them. And I said, oh, yeah, those are the Palladians, you know. And I've had very close contact with them, and I used to be one of them in another lifetime. But he told me, he goes, well, they're telling me that you've been reactivated 9 times. And I told him, I said, you know, I am so done. I am so done with the warring and with the confrontation energies and the nonsense. I said, I just want to go live in the forest or the jungle and play my flute, basically, and talk to nature and grow things. I said, that's where I'm at. And he goes, well, you're not done yet. You know, and I said, well, I said, this is my last activation. You know, I'm going to a restful, peaceful rejuvenation center planet, you know, for a while. And do something else, but it was kind of funny. But yeah, they're definitely very, very, very advanced, and they're to deal with a lot of this regenerative ET stuff going on, the Archon stuff that's happening on the planet, and helping to tear down this old Archon network, the old hierarchical greed and power program that's running, and they're doing a really good job of it right now because that old grid is just falling apart.
Well, isn't that old grid kind of devoid of divine feminine energies and influences?
Oh, definitely. And you know what's funny too? Almost all of my teachers were females, and the ones that I've really connected with that were really connected because you know God's a feeling. You know, the ultimate power is love, basically, and the feminine energy is has preserved that, you know, and they've preserved that connection. And the men, you know, ran off in the intellect and kind of ran amok and got disconnected from their heart, which is the biggest problem we have on the planet right now. When you're in your heart, you know, you just don't do things like you do. You know, you don't go to war with others. You don't level whole cities and kill millions of people, you know, innocent people that and families, you know, you don't spread depleted uranium around, you know, and destroy your mother, you know, your mother Earth, the very platform for life. You just don't do that. And I've always felt, you know, what this whole planet needs is a consortium of grandmothers, you know, to run the show because, you know, they have the wisdom and the love for family and they don't send their kids to war and they don't say, respect other families and the loss of other families. And that's the problem right now. We just dehumanized, depersonalized everything, and I think the goal of the Dark Hearts or the Illuminati is to create nice little zombie neutered robots, you know, to do their bidding. And that's the program, and to totally squash the feminine and get people away from their hearts and get them, you know, they do that. They have ceremonies where they sacrifice care. So you can totally step away from your heart. You don't care what happens to anybody, or it's all about power and wealth. And that's the program they're under. But, you know, I always ask people go, well, you know, there you go again. You're going into fear. You're going into the negative and everything else. But, you know, I ask them, I said, well, you know, if you really think that the love and light is in control on this planet right now, look at the condition of your environment. You know, look at the condition of your civilization. Look at the poverty, you know, the disease, you know, look at the wars, the depleted uranium, all of that stuff, you know, Fukushima, Gulf spill. I mean, I can go on and on, depleted uranium, GMO, all that stuff, chemtrails, put it all together and take a good hard look at how huge and widespread that is. And you tell me who's in control. These are inhuman acts. They have nothing to do with the welfare of humanity, the earth. And a matter of fact, the beings that are in charge rather despise humanity and the earth. They despise nature, and they're inhuman, you know. So we have to come to that realization to solve this problem, is that when you move up the power, you know, the ladder of power and wealth, and you get up to the top, you have some very inhuman energies and some unseen energies calling the shots, and a lot of people doing their bidding, you know, in ignorance, not even knowing who they're working for. But you know, I think that's all coming out right now. I loved it when the other day I was listening to a radio show, and Michael Sala with ExoPolitics was here, and I guess another guy, Jerome Corsi, and all these guys, and they were all talking about how the Nazis, how prevalent they were, and how we just moved them over here, and they took over a lot of the agents, took over NASA, CIA, and everything else, and how there's a huge Nazi presence, you know, in within our society, and those guys were working with regenerate ETs, and so we have a Nazi, heavy Nazi ET, regenerate ET infiltration here, you know, and then Iran comes out and says it, and a couple other countries are saying the same, that we have that basically America is actually governed on the highest levels by these regenerate ETs and ex-Nazis and things like that. It's very sad, but if you really look at the history and look back at what's happening and look at the condition of the planet, there are some very inhuman things happening by some very inhuman people, and until we take a long, hard look at that, it's going to continue.
Well, you know, the good news is that the Earth itself is going to go up in frequency so that they just disappear and they have to go somewhere else to make a mess. And that's it. You
yeah,
know?
They'll implode. Yeah.
And I know that
when
people come to East Seti Ranch, there has to be a certain frequency attained. You have to, you know, like sing a higher note in order to have that connection to the fifth dimensional beings, because if you're carrying any of that, you know, negative, hate, greed kind of energy, they can't tolerate that. It's like fingernails on the chalkboard, and you won't have that experience. You prove that over and over and over again at your ranch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and that's the thing, is that there's two things I think we need to do. Enlightenment means to be a knowledge of everything, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly, both sides of the coin, not just one side. And I see a lot of people out there giving a half message, you know. There's a lot of some people in the different movements, you know, that are out there, and they're saying, oh, all ETs are good, it's all good, there are no negative, you know, ETs, and there's no negativity, just open, wide, embrace anything that comes to you. I think that's the height of irresponsibility, and, you know, knowing full well that, you know, throughout all of our history, this has been going on, and this is all recorded. And, you know, even in the Nag Hammadi and all these books, they've talked about these networks of regenerative teas and discarnates and things like that. So it's kind of like an ongoing thing that's been happening forever. And to say it doesn't exist and it's not happening, I think is really irresponsible. And the empowering thing to do is teach people that, you know, these forces are there, and this is how you deal with them, and here's how you heal unseen negative influences, and this is how you maintain your self-authority, and this is how you don't get fooled by these different groups, you know. And so empower people, you know, to take control over their fields and their energies, and not allow these other energies to come in and wreak havoc either through them or around them.
Yeah, well, you can't rise above something by ignoring it, I don't think.
Exactly.
I don't think force like that.
Well, yeah, if you have a big hole in your leg, you know, and it's going septic, you know, and you're starting to get gangrene or something, you know, you can't just keep saying all is good, all is well, that didn't really happen, and whatever, you have to address it. You know, you might have to clean up the wound and put a little salve on it, and maybe wrap it up so it stays clean, and then focus on it being whole and healthy, you know. And if you ignore
right.
the first steps and some of the basic physical things, yeah, you may end up losing your leg and losing your life.
Right. So keep your eyes open and your heart focused on the highest frequency you can maintain for the longest period of time.
Exactly. It's body, mind, and spirit. We have to utilize all aspects and get all of them into alignment, you know, and we're functioning properly. But if we ignore the physical. I had a person that was a very strong Course in Miracles person, and he was really focusing on it's all illusion. This is all illusion. It doesn't matter. You know, the physical is not real, and I'm not going to look at anything negative because it's just an illusion. And so, you know, he was telling me this whole story, how I need to be more like that and everything else. And I said, well, let's test your theory. And he says, all right. And I said, okay, see that tree right there? And he said, yeah. And I said, take a run at it, you know. you know, and then come back and tell me how, you know. You know, Albert Einstein said that, you know, it's all an illusion, but, you know, a very persistent one, you know. But, you know, as long as we have a physical body and, you know, we have physical challenges and we have things we need to take care of and deal with. And I think this physical level is just as godly as any other level. We just have kind of forgotten that. We don't see the creator in all creation, and we haven't been behaving accordingly. So, you know, that's my thing, is if you really want to ascend, you don't ascend by leaving here. You ascend by loving everything here, mastering judgment, and bringing heaven to earth, which means into every cell of your body, and then your body, you know, it takes off. But you don't ascend you know, ignoring everything and trying to leave and get out of here. It just doesn't work that way.
That's so true. It is so true. Well, James, we have some callers on the switchboard, and there are some at least one question here. So would you be up for answering some questions?
Sure.
Okay. All right. We are going to be talking to Jordan. Jordan, you have a question for James?
Yes, I do.
Welcome.
Hi, Ariel.
Hey.
Okay, thank you. I do owe you guys a big thank you because, and especially James, because of the eSETI website that you had up, it's because of you that I met Lavendar and Ariel to go to their crystal quest. So I want
great.
To tell you thank you for that. And it's definitely been worth it, and just I wanted to also just kind of give you a plug on the website, though, but I think that anybody listening, that it would be worth it because it's really helped in the activation process, especially since all the healers that you have on there, like the Starseed hotline, you can go on there and activate, you know, all the past, you know, episodes and that type of thing. So anyway, it's really cool, and I hope people join more of your website because it's really worth it and has really helped me. But I've had, since then, I've kind of followed you and what's been going up there on the ranch a little bit. So I have a couple questions about that. Now, I understand that there in the mountain you have kind of a hub where you've seen ships and come and go. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's both a stargate for the higher dimensional beings to be popping in and out of, and as well as an inner earth portal, because underneath the mountain there's a huge civilization there as well.
Okay, and who are they?
Well, they're basically us. They're our ancient ancestors, and they're returning right now. And there's also some other ones that seem to evolve on a different level or in a different way. They're a little different than us, but, you know, I always see it as the greater family of man, and they're returning to help out. And you know, they're also helping us out to kind of get rid of this infestation that we have right now of some of the regenerate ones that have been wreaking havoc on the earth.
Most definitely. And does that include also getting rid of all the reptilians?
Yeah, there's some tall grays and reptilians that I've run into that were pretty nasty. And, you know, I haven't had any fun tickets with them. But there are some people that said they are having some encounters with reptilians that aren't negative, that aren't bad. I've noticed that, you know, and there's some people that even said they had them as lovers, you know, and things of that nature. But I've noticed as soon as you stop playing their game, or as soon as you say, I don't want to do this anymore, it becomes quite a different story, you know, as long as they can continue to utilize you or they're getting what they need out of it, out of the program. They are very loving and friendly and whatever, but as soon as you say, okay, enough, you know, I'm not going in that direction, it turns out to get kind of ugly.
Yeah, and by their fruits you shall know them, from what I understand. But
exactly.
Also, too, it's kind of my understanding, too, that they can defect to the other side, so there's going to be good and bad in each race. You know, good and bad in reptilians and also the grays, that type of thing. So is that kind of where the tall whites come in?
Yeah, I don't exactly know who these tall whites are. I haven't dealt with them. I haven't experienced them. So, and a lot of times there's a reason for that, and it's probably because the more benevolent ones are really watching over us and watching over the land, and it's not in my highest and best good at this point in time to deal with that. But there's I'm really not sure who they are, and I need to look into that more, but I know they've been working very closely with the you know, military industrial complex, and they've been working with some projects that really aren't in the highest and best good of humanity earth, and they've been working with the elite who's been suppressing humanity earth. So
okay.
I don't have a lot of time, and I don't put a lot of time and energy into those folks. I focus mainly on the more benevolent ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I was just wondering that, and I've heard just the tall whites kind of come out of dreamland, but where that's an industrial complex. But
yeah.
I also wanted to also ask you about then the Sasquatch that you've mentioned run around your place and that people actually feed them up there. Can you give us a little bit of history and what you think their purpose is?
It's my understanding that there's different types of Sasquatch out there, and some I know seem to be part of the human experience, and they evolved in nature. They did evolve into like technology and trying to control and dominate nature. They evolved with nature. And there's different groups that seems to be at different levels of evolution. We've seen everything from some that are very spiritual and very, very loving and very concerned about what's happening on the planet. And they just basically want to be left alone. They don't want to deal with humanity because of a long history of humanity exploiting them and harming them and destroying their environment and things of that nature. So they mainly kind of remain, you know, to their own. You know, they keep to their own. But if you're out there and if you have the right consciousness, there's an old saying by the elders out there. They said, if you go out searching for Bigfoot, you'll never find him. But if Bigfoot wants to find you, it will. So if you go out there. Yeah, and so if you go out there and you're playing music and you're loving and having fun, having a good time, and they feel you have no ill intent or you're not aggressive and you're not carrying guns and things like that, they're very curious, you know, and they do want to know about you and they do want to interact. And they're very curious, but at the same time, they're very wary because of all the negative interactions, you know, that they've had in the past.
Yeah. My sister and her son ran into a couple of them up in lower Idaho there, almost in contact, just anyway. But it was just really interesting that she has come in contact with them, and you had mentioned them as well. So are they more animalistic, or is this just different areas would be different ways?
Yeah, there's different ones. Some are more animal. Some are seem to be highly spiritual and very civilized. I watched a female one walk right in front of me and just vanish and disappear right in front of me. So they seem to have the ability to either bilocate, which a lot of shamans know how to do that and disappear. It's not really that hard. We have people disappearing in our Yugun classes all the time where they just,
like Kenji,
you know.
Like Kenji Kamara?
Yeah, they totally, when we're doing the classes, yeah, they vanish. People vanish. You can see right through them. We have photographs of that where you see the chair, you know, right through them and things like that. But there seems to be a different group. Now, we found a big chunk of hair up in the forest, because we're way up in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. We're right next to it. And they brought down some hair, and it was about 3 foot long hair, three and a half, three foot long hair. And we had it analyzed. And when they analyzed this hair, a forensic specialist and a fiber optic specialist, all these people checked it out. And they said, we don't know what this is. The first thing was, what is this, alien or something? Technology, because it was silicon-based. It was completely hollow, and it had other trace minerals in it. And it was organic in a way. And they said that, first of all, we can't duplicate anything this perfect, you know, this. And they said, second of all, I don't know what this is. They said it was totally, they couldn't identify it with any manufacturer, anything. It was far beyond anything. So I thought that was interesting. And there's a theory that there is a synthetic Bigfoot that the ETs create, you know, like the big bad dog. If they're working in sensitive areas, they have a their own little watchdogs, you might say, that kind of keep people out of an area where they're doing some work.
Yeah, they might scare generally the general public, I would think, or mm-hmm. have a general fear of them. You mentioned also silicon-based, and I just kind of also was wondering, do you feel that since we're going to more of a silicon-based, that the more fear that we release, the more healing that we do on the planet, that we'll all be going to the silicon-based, and we'll be able to all reach to that point, and Mother Earth is going to go through that as well?
Yes. I mean, Earth is basically one big crystal, and people don't realize that. But, you know, sand is a crystal, and water is a crystal as well. And, you know, you really look at what we're comprised of. It's mainly sand and water, you know. So the Earth is already basically one big crystal, and we seem to be going in that direction. I looked up this. There's a lot of research on that, and I looked into it about carbon. I can't remember what it is, carbon something shifting to another form of carbon. And I should have wrote that down. I did write it down a long time ago. I forgot about it. But with this shift, it's because of changes coming in from the universe and from the sun as well, that it's creating this change, and that would actually move us into a more silicon-based being, you might say. The whole Earth is going to go into a higher frequency, and when you do that, you move into that more of a silicon base. You have the ability to time travel, move forward or backward in time, bilocate. All those other things start becoming an easier
more
potential
fluid.
When you exactly.
Yeah, very good. So that kind of brings me to what your feeling is about disclosure and how that will move us forward, and if you have any predictions when that will occur.
Yeah, my feelings about disclosure is I don't want to dishonor the work being done out there and a lot of the people coming forward. I mean, that is a good work, you know, to bring that information out. And a lot of, especially like Paul Hellyer and people like that he was a former defense minister for Canada, you know, coming out and talking about all the UFO activity and saying they are real, and it's time to stop warring on each other and them and open up to, you know, get the help and technology we need. So when you have people of that caliber, I think that's great. But I also feel at the same time is that rather than focusing on getting the government to admit ETs are real and they do exist, you know, we're still giving our power away to this external authority. And maybe if we put more time and energy in educating people, you know, that they are here and here is the reality of what's going on, pretty soon these external authorities will have no power whatsoever because they'll be so few in number, you know, and it's going to be so ridiculous. It's like the newscasters, you know, they can't even sell newspapers anymore. They can't get people to buy newspapers, and even the online stuff is going down, and people just are not caring anymore about mainstream news because it's such a program of control and deception and nonsense, and they're just, a lot of professional spinners. You know, they just spin the truth however they want. So a lot of people
there's still a lot of negative. Yeah. I think if you even step up to say that you saw one, there's a lot of, you know, still criticism about that and fear behind it. But I believe, and maybe you believe this as well, that the more work we can do on an individual basis, the more it does raise the consciousness and into disclosure, just more on what we can do personally.
Exactly. At more of a grassroots level, we need to just stop shrinking in fear and just talk about it and just bring it out in the open. And before, it used to be really taboo, and now everybody's talking about it. It's amazing, and there's huge flyovers over California, Oregon, and Washington lately. There's a lot of activity to support this, and I know when I go to other countries, there isn't a problem. You know, you can talk openly about all this, and it's just accepted. But here in the United States, yeah, because we back engineered the technology since the 30s, basically, we've been working on this stuff. You know, it went under national security, and so they tried to, you know, create the giggle effect and ridicule everybody and try to say it's not real and whatever in this country. But in most other countries, it's pretty much an accepted fact. And, you know, it's sad how much the mainstream, I call it the lamestream media, it's sad how much they control consciousness on this planet, you know, but basically I always tell people, well, do the research, you know, if you don't believe the devil or whatever, go to the churches and see all the frescoes painted all over the walls of these beautiful ships, you know, engaging, you know, the historical figures of the past, you know, look at the Vedas. You know, look at all of these things. It's always been a part of our history, but the past 60 years, it's been highly suppressed by the government, mainly because they've been back engineering the technology for the war industry.
Yeah. Well,
Jordan,
people,
I'm going to have to cut in here because we've had another couple of people coming on the switchboard who also have some questions. And thank you so much. It's good to hear from you again.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, great
Jordan.
Questions. Thanks for calling
Thanks,
in.
James. Bye.
Bye-bye, Jordan. So yeah, we've got about 10 minutes, so we've got another couple of callers that just came on with questions. First of all, we are going to be talking to, let me get the right button pushed here. We're going to be talking to Cliff, and he has a question about the bird people. Cliff, you're on the air.
Good evening to Dancing Lady and to James. This is Cliff H., and you talked about the segment and the lion people. I wonder if you would address the bird people. I am of the bird tribes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard a lot about them, and I've had, like, dreams about them. I haven't had any real interaction with them. And so I'm not a real, you know, I like to talk about things that I've experienced that I know firsthand. And if there's something else I've heard through research, I'll have to say, you know, well, that's what I've heard through research. But as far as the bird people, my understanding is almost every form has a highly evolved aspect to it, you know, that seems to move more towards a humanoid or upright expression. And and that's what I've been told by some other people, is that, you know, everything here on Earth has a counterpart, you know, that's highly evolved, that on, you know, on another dimension or another level. But yeah, well, what do you know about them?
Remember,
yeah,
we only have a few minutes here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, perhaps I will try to get with you on the East Eddy Ranch in April, May, whatever, and we can have a discussion of that.
Yeah, sounds great, you know, because I'd like to look more into them and even connect more with them, and I'm sure I know people that I know that are in the movement that I look at them and I see a bird. I just see energy around them and the wings and everything, and they even look like a bird in a way, you know, so it's kind of interesting. So I'm sure that's a reality.
Yeah, the Native Americans had a lot to do with the bird people and whatnot. Yeah, as I understand it, the segment, the cat people and the bird people played this game once before, and so we were invited in to play this game as guests. And,
interesting, yeah.
And okay. That probably as far as I'm...
Yeah.
You're, it seems like you're calling from Colorado, so you're not all that far from East Eddy.
Right.
Or at least
right.
Closer than we are here in the East.
Yeah.
So, Cliff, thank you for calling in, and I'm sure that you and James are going to have a great conversation at another time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no doubt in my twisted little mind. Thank you.
So much for calling.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And we have one more caller, and I believe that I know who this is. Is this our Emily?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, everyone.
You're calling from Australia?
Yes.
Wow. So, James, meet Emily. She's
welcome.
Calling from Australia, and she's got a question for you.
Yes.
Hi. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Emily.
I would say
thank
good
you.
On you.
Thank you. My question is, if you could... wouldn't mind talking a little bit about differentiating between reptilians that are in body on the planet, the ones that we know can shapeshift and so on, versus the ones that have actually incarnated in human bodies that a lot of star seeds are being born into the families of. Do you know anything about
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. Boy, we have very little time. If you want, shoot me an email. You know, and to the UFO James one on the website at eastedy.org, and I can give you more information on that. But, I mean,
thank
that's
you.
Such a long subject because there has been a lot of interbreeding and a lot of genetic manipulation going on, and there are shape-shifting ones, and there are some that are more the DNA is kind of human reptilian. You know, there's so much going on. There's been so much manipulation in that area that it's like a book in itself. But there's some pretty funny things going on YouTube, you know, where like Obama's bodyguard turns into a reptilian shapeshifter. And it's pretty convincing video when you look at this guy and how what he ends up to his head, you know, it's undeniable when you see him shapeshift that it's not a human head at all. You know, there's some other stuff out there that's kind of iffy, you know, with the eyes changing and things like that. You know, you can't really go by that because, you know, some of the feline beings, they will come through somebody and their eyes will change. I just saw somebody's eyes turn yellow and glowing and just beautiful, you know, and people will say, oh, that's a reptilian energy. Well, it may not be. So, you know, it may not, maybe good, maybe bad. You know, it's hard to tell unless you have the intersensitivity really developed. But, you know, it goes back to their fruits. By their fruits, you'll know them. you know, and enlightened people don't kill people, you know, enlightened people don't torture people and they don't spy on people. And we have to look at the basics, and by their fruits you'll know them by their acts, you know. Forget about what they say because they're brilliant at manipulating, but we have to look at what they do.
Thank you.
Well, that's really...
Feel free to send me an email, and I can talk more about it. It's just such a long subject here. I can give you more information or put you on to people that have more information about that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thanks.
Well, thank you for calling, Emily, and you're up early in the morning in Australia. It's really good to hear your voice, sweetie.
Yours too.
Yeah, I'm trying to get out there. I'm trying to get out to Australia. Probably maybe going out there soon. We'll see what opens up. But there's several groups out there that want to bring me out for doing a tour, and we'll see how that unfolds.
Fabulous. I'll keep my ear to the ground.
Great. Thanks, Emily.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that is all the time we have for questions, but James, the time always flies by when you're on our show because you just have so much wonderful information, and I know Lavendar will agree that it is right on. Lavendar, we're just wrapping up here, so if you have any last comments, now is your chance.
I'm just happy to hear his voice, and I'm happy to know that he's in Hawaii. And if you need some more Giza crystals, James, let me know and send me an address where I can send them to you because I have a feeling that you may need some more.
Yeah, I'm sure we are going to with the work that we're doing. But
so you just
shoot
an email
to
me with your mailing address, and I'll get some to you.
Great. All right. Well, hey, you guys keep up the great work as well, and keep the information flowing and the support system going on because, you know, this now's the time, you know. We all got to step up the plate and get busy, and you guys are doing some great work over there.
As
thank
are
you.
So thank you so much for spending this time with us, James. Everyone, once again, the website is eceti.org, and that's eceti.org. James Gilliland, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And we would like to thank everyone for listening. A special thanks to Fiona for manning the switchboard, or should I say womaning the switchboard this evening. Lavendar and Anastasia from all of us here at Starseed Radio Academy. Have a great week, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.